This episode of the Secret Society of Flat Tires is brought to you by the International Association for the Protection of Silence and Quiet. The IAFTPOSAC is a nonprofit group dedicated to honoring silence and low volumes. They work tirelessly to help those who are suffering from just too much racket find a moment of silence so that their heads don't explode. I myself have been a longtime donor and supporter of the program, and I can say they do truly great work. So please, take a moment and head on over to their website at www.everythingistooloudithinkimgoingtoexplode.com and see for yourself the excellent work this group does all over the earth, and consider donating your life savings today.
You have successfully connected to the Secret Society of Fly Tires podcast.
Hello everyone, my friends, my loyal listener base, and hello to anyone who might be checking out the show for the first time, too. It's me, Mike, the host of Secret Society of Fly Tires. Can I start off this second episode of Season 3 with a quick apology before we get into the real content? Two apologies, really. The first one is for Jonathan Farmer, who was nice enough to make time for me and let me pick his brain again. I'm sorry I talked about farts for most of the episode that was meant to be about his awesome pattern, the Beast of Burden.
Anyone out there that feels offended by those comments, I just want to say I'm sorry, I apologize.
And the same goes to you listeners. I took a long break and came back with a show where I rambled about my friend's farting ability when I should have been at least giving you a little bit of info on the Beast of Burden or fly tying in general. Maybe the material list or a quick step-by-step. Let's make it three apologies. I should also probably say sorry for making fun of British people and their two fart champions. I try not to be racist on this show because it isn't cool, and the only times I've tiptoed into that area is by making fun of people in the UK on a couple of occasions.
Fuck off! That's what you can do if you want to do. Look, I'm down bloody here and no fucking don't bloody come down bloody light a bloody press pen if I fuck ask you to come in and have a cup of tea, and you're telling me what the fuck. Jesus Christ couldn't tell me what the fucking do, never mind you.
Probably because it's easy, and I feel safe doing so. But I mean no harm, just laughs. I can't undo any of this stuff now, but I can say that I'll try harder this time. That's what I'm gonna do. I've been trying to make this episode happen for a long time, and I finally did it. It's about tying flies to fish in the vacation paradise simulation we call Hawaii. I love Hawaii. I'm lucky to say that I've been there 3 times and I desperately want to go back. It's one of the main reasons I've been trying to secure some real paid sponsors for this show, but I'm starting to accept that that will probably never happen. What company in their right mind would give me money to hawk their products while I ramble about farting for an hour on what is supposed to be a fly tying podcast? If any company out there was actually interested in being a sponsor of this show, I'd probably end up talking them out of it anyway. I've sealed my fate. I'll just keep using the fake ads the worm and I cook up. They're better anyway. You might be surprised to learn that it was pretty difficult to nail down a guest to speak with me about Hawaii. I don't really blame the other folks that I tried to trick into coming on this show. If I lived in Hawaii, the last thing I'd want to do is sit on Zoom for an hour with some weird skeleton-bodied stranger that refers to himself by a bunch of different names. I finally got one, though. Thanks to my friend Pelagos Fly Rods on Instagram, who helped connect me with today's guest, Makani Christensen. Makani was born in Hawaii and is a very busy dude. He has 2 main operations, Flyfish Hawaii, his saltwater fly fishing guide service, and Kiwi Adventures. That is probably the first of many Hawaiian words that I will butcher in this episode, and I'm sorry. Kiwi Adventures was founded in 2008 when Makani felt Hawaii lacked in providing tourists an intimate, personal, and embracing connection to Hawaii's diversely rich culture. Upon returning to Hawaii from his combat services, Makani decided to provide the local perspective to the tourism industry with the real stories from the people who live it and the knowledge passed down from their families. A waterman all his life, he began his company with a focus on water sports and fishing activities, eventually providing all types of fun and educational tours to local, mainland, and international clients. He developed the majority of the tours based on how he grew up on the island of Hawaii. His way of life consists of snorkeling, fishing, surfing, hiking, hunting, camping, and spending time with his young family. After studying at Kamehameha Secondary School, Makani graduated from the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland. He then entered the military as a Marine officer, where he served his country for 5 years with tours in both Iraq and Afghanistan. After receiving the Joint Service Commendation Medal, Makani was honorably discharged in 2008. Along with his Bachelor of Science in Oceanography and his strong Hawaiian genealogy, Makani's love for the land and sea is what inspired him to start his own business. It is here where Makani finds true joy, sharing with others about Hawaii's history, culture, and ocean environment. I was connected with the real deal, folks, and we had a great chat.
Is there anything he can't do?
That is a great question. Being referred to as a waterman is one of the only things I still aspire to be. In my opinion, it might be the most prestigious title outside of being called Dad. I'm excited to share our chat with you all. If you wanted to catch a bonefish in Hawaii, this is the episode for you. It's great timing, too, because as I write this, it's been cold, gloomy, and damp here in Northern California, and my brain needed a quick taste of tropical paradise to keep me on the level. A warm island conversation to melt my icy heart.
So we're going to melt your icy heart with a cool island song.
Normally, my younger brothers are the ones that keep me in a positive headspace, but it's harder to do during the winter. I'm not ashamed to say that I deal with some seasonal depression. I wish that my winter steelhead obsession helped me with that, but it's just something my dumb brain does to me this time of year. I gotta work a little harder to keep my brain out of the dark. When I'm feeling shitty, my brothers always find a way to make me laugh and help me adjust my mindset, like maybe having a long text conversation about the best ideas for tattooing your dick. I'm sure that one of my listeners out there has a dick tattoo. At least I hope one of you does. And if not, I'm sure a lot of you have at least thought about it.
Right now we're about to go inside this tattoo shop and see if we can get a tattoo on our dick.
Yeah.
Do we have to stay hard or it doesn't matter?
It doesn't matter.
Once you get your first tattoo and understand the unique pain associated with the procedure, it's almost impossible not to imagine what part of the body would feel the worst to get ink-covered needles rammed into your skin at a breakneck speed. Ah! Eyelids. Tip of the nose, bottom of your feet, armpit, nipple, and at the top of the list is the penis.
Get your hand off my penis!
The internet tells me that someone who's planning to get their penis tattooed has to be fully erect for the procedure, which probably makes it even more uncomfortable for both the tattooee and the tattooer. This may or may not be true, come to find out, because I watched quite a few videos on this subject for research purposes. But try and put all the pain and embarrassment to the side and just think about all the cool options. First one would be to tattoo your dick with a realistic wood grain, like a Louisville Slugger bat. It's a built-in wood pun, and would obviously look great. You can do it with or without the Louisville Slugger logo, depending on how scared you are of a lawsuit that would bring you into a court of law to then display your new penis tattoo to a jury of your peers.
That's a great idea!
Another idea would be to make it look like a barber pole, with the telltale red swirl around it. More of a traditional choice, I guess. It would also look a little bit like St. Augustine Lighthouse in Florida, so that's a two for one. Another great penis tattoo idea that might actually be my favorite for its simplicity is to tattoo the whole thing in a solid color.
I just had one of my greatest ideas.
Your choice of color, of course. You're the one getting your dick tattooed, not me. But if I had to weigh in on it, I'd urge you to not go with green, as it might make your junk look diseased or sickly and at risk of falling off. Most of the other colors would be badass, though. Any sexual partner would be impressed by your new brightly colored dick and would want to see it more often. I mean, just imagine how excited they would be if you had picked their favorite color.
Sorry for the interruption, but I do need to tell you that this episode of the Secret Society of Fly Tires is brought to you by Wet Pig Coin. Wet Pig Coin is a new cryptocurrency token that is definitely going to get real valuable real fast. Trust me, I know about this kind of stuff, and you can too if you go online to the internet and order this book I just wrote and read called Wet Pig Coin, Understanding the Wettest Edge of Cryptocurrency, Technology, Science, Healing, Orbs, Crystals, and Talismans. investments. Seriously, this book is great and will give you all of the knowledge you need to invest in Wet Pig Coin today and make millions or probably even billions of dollars this week from home for free while you're soaking your hemorrhoids in an Epsom salt bath and eating a Hungry Man dinner that you cooked in the microwave, but it's still really cold in the middle and there's even a little bit of ice on top of the Salisbury steak, but you didn't care, so you're just horking it down in your dirty turd butthole bath.
Okay, I'll bring this back around to fly tying if you insist. Why not tattoo your penis to match your favorite color of chenille? Maybe you can tattoo it to look like a squirmy wormy. You could also tattoo it to look like a pro sport fisher tube. Those come in different sizes too, so you can match up with your actual length and girth.
Needle dick! Needle dick!
Your name is Needle Dick!
Sure, I neglected to mention any of the fun ideas that would end up changing depending on the state of your dick, like maybe tattooing the head of your dick as a flower of some type, and then the shaft as the stalk, and as your dick grows, so does the flower. Isn't that romantic?
Oh, baby.
I bet you listeners probably have some good ideas too. Feel free to share them with me via email or leave them as a comment in one of my Instagram posts. I'll send some stickers to the ones that make me laugh the most. Shit, I just apologized for all the fart talk in the last episode and I jumped right into dick tattoo ideas. I can't help myself. I'm also pretty bad at retaining information in the short term. I can remember situations and smells from my childhood, but I forget most of the things that I learned on this show not long after completing an episode. I am not going to apologize again in this edition of Secret Society of Fly Tires, though, unless I say something really stupid.
You will.
I try to keep it to around 2 apologies per episode, and I've met my quota.
But that's my life!
I'm still trying to fight off my tendency to procrastinate on the work I have to do to release this third season, but I realize that I just need to put a goal in front of me. After season 2, my goal was to secure some real advertisers, but that just isn't going to happen. I've decided to shift my goal to writing my 1,000,000th word. I write about 5,000 words or so per episode, and if I did my math correctly, that lines me up to achieve that milestone right around episode 200. Will I make it that far? I only do 12 episodes per season. That would put me into season 17, and I might be like 70 years old by then. My closest buddies would respond to that with, "But you're already 70 years old." That is them making fun of me because they love me, though. Anyways, that's my goal. 1,000,000 borderline pointless words.
If you specify what you want, and you want it, which means you're willing to make the sacrifices necessary to get it, then the probability that you'll get it expands immensely.
After I reach that goal, I'll never type or say another word again. Maybe I'll enter as a contestant on that reality show alone, so I don't have to see or hear anyone for a while. People tie flies and fly fish on that show, you know. I could find plenty of things to do alone in the wilderness. Do you think contestants masturbate on that show?
Yes, they do masturbate. A lot.
If so, that never makes it into any of the episodes and kind of negates the reality aspect of it for me. In fact, I might write a letter to the production team about that oversight. On one of the recent seasons, one of the contestants even had the foresight to dye their own hair in a color that was meant to potentially be used as fly tying material while they were out there alone, and that rules. They cut their own hair and tied a fly with it, and if I remember correctly, they caught a fish. I don't think that contestant won the bag of money that the winner gets for being the last lonely, cold, and hungry person on that show, but he sure won over my heart. Most reality shows are very bad, if you ask me, and they don't offer any redeeming value to society. But Alone is great, and Fish Tank is also great. They're unique and don't suck your will to live like so many reality shows do.
The Fish Tank is a fully monitored smart house. You live in the walls. You control the action.
Speaking of sucking, I'll provide you all a status update on my quest to quit smoking now, since that is the loose theme of this season. I am still sucking down cigarettes into my smoke tank like it's an oxygen tank that keeps a scuba diver alive under the water.
Hello, how are you? I am under the water. Please help me.
It must stay full or I will drown. I am resenting cigarettes more now though, usually verbally to myself. I talk to my smokes before I light them and I tell them, "Fuck you." I tell them I hate them. Then I put my lips around them and inhale their exotic blend of French tobacco. I should at least change my brand to one that isn't an import. Parliament brand cigarettes are even more expensive than ones they make here domestically, and in California they cost even more because the state and its people want to punish us poor smokers with never-ending guilt and by destroying our wallets. I'm gonna use sucking as yet another segue into my next hilarious bit. I don't think I'll be able to bring this one back around to fly tying as easily as I did with the dick tattoos bit, but I will try. Maybe you're already aware, but ex-pro wrestling superstar Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, is also the star of the number one best animated GIF on the internet. I'll link to it in the show notes if you aren't familiar, but to explain it quickly, the situation is set up like this. Shawn Michaels is walking down the ramp, approaching the ring, hamming it up for the crowd and the camera, when he spots a fan that he wants to single out for whatever reason. The cameraman is walking backwards while filming as Shawn Michaels walks towards him and was either already in on what Shawn was about to do or deserves an Emmy, because Shawn points to the fan and starts miming, giving someone a very elaborate over-the-top blowjob, and points at the fan like, "This is you. I'm mocking you sucking off someone's dick." And the fan goes ballistic, acting like he's trying to get through the crowd to attack Shawn Michaels for making a fool of him in front of an arena full of people and on television, but not actually gaining any ground. This GIF works as a nonverbal response to almost anything your friends might text you. Give it a shot. It might make you think that Shawn was a bully, but another scenario I caught recently from an old wrestling event added even more to the legend of the Heartbreak Kid. In my broken brain, Shawn just being part of the mimed BJ scene I described catapults him into the Wrestling Hall of Fame already, and it didn't even involve wrestling anyone. But at a different event, another fan from one of the front rows caught his attention. This fan was mentally handicapped and somehow accepted that he was part of the show. He made his way out of the seats and close to the ring looking to wrestle someone, and the refs weren't having any of it. They were starting to treat him as some sort of security threat, and things could have got bad real quick. It was live TV, and Shawn jumped into action to intervene and saved the poor kid from being roughed up by security. He adapted to a fairly intense situation in a live TV setting and acted with compassion and intelligence to escort the kid to safety and calm his irrational feeling that he had become a pro wrestler. Now, I am not a voting man. I'm a wacky conspiracy theorist, remember? And I don't believe our votes actually matter, but if I did vote, these two things on their own are enough for me to vote for Shawn Michaels to be the President of the United States of America.
The idea of the president is just ridiculous. It's a bullshit idea. The president is a tradition now, like a turkey.
Please consider writing him in on this year's and every year's ballot until it becomes a reality. We all know he'd be better than anyone on the actual ballot partaking in the weird ritual of becoming President of the United States. And I did not tie that back to fly tying, but that's okay. I realized that I didn't get into anything very weird in the last episode. Jonathan Farmer and I talked about giants a little bit, which was fun, but the monologue was lacking weird, if you ask me. And you should ask me, because I wrote it. It was heavy on the farts, though, and I urge anyone who is really into farting to check out Season 3, Episode 1 of my show, Secret Society of Fly Tires. Listen to it before it's locked up for the Diamond Platinum Plus paid tier and unavailable to everyone who has decided to stay in the free listener zone. Anyways, Hawaii has a bunch of supernatural lore and high strangeness to dig into if that is your thing, and as you know, that is definitely my thing.
You know what I like.
The first one I'd mention isn't just a supernatural ghost story, but also happens to be the name of a great band featuring my personal guitar hero, John Reese. The Night Marchers. The band has only put out two formal albums so far, See You in Magic and Ale Ale. Both are great. I'll be bummed out if you don't give them a spin if you aren't already familiar. The band took their name from the Hawaiian myth of the Night Marchers, who are said to be deadly ghosts of ancient tribal Hawaiian warriors. On the nights honoring the Hawaiian gods, they are said to come forth from their burial sites, or to rise up from the ocean, and to march in a large group to ancient Hawaiian battle sites or other sacred places. The legend says the Night Marchers are normal-sized warriors, dressed for battle, carrying spears, clubs, and some are beating war drums and blowing tones from conch shells to announce the advancing of their march. They march in darkness after sunset as a group, continuously until just before sunrise. Anyone living along their path may hear chanting, sounds of blown conch shells, and marching noises in the night. Other signs of them include a foul and musky, death-like odor, and torches getting brighter and brighter as the Night Marchers get closer. Night Marchers are said to even appear during the day if they are to escort a dying relative to the spirit world. That is fucking cool. Pretty freaky, too. Usually ghosts are singular, but this is a whole army of them. According to the myth, they're suspended in air. Their feet do not touch water or ground as they traverse through the night, and they leave no evidence of their visitations. It's also said that if you were to encounter them, you should strip off your clothes and lay face down on the ground.
That's what she said.
This would be an ideal time to have a dick tattoo that could help you camouflage yourself and distract the night marchers. If you had tattooed your dick to look like a vine or maybe a piece of ginger root, you might have an easier time staying hidden. I should really stop trying to convince you all to get your dicks tattooed. But if you visit Hawaii, please do not miss out on probably my favorite dick-shaped food in the world, Hawaii's puka dog. Anthony Bourdain told me about it, I think. Or maybe Guy Fieri? One of those two Food Network superstars went there, and I watched the show and decided to go there myself, and boy was I happy I did. Puka dog toasts their buns on hot spikes and then fill the cavity with mustard and your choice of a tropical relish, and then they slide a sausage down into that bun.
That's what she said.
That's my joke, damn it.
It might be the most pornographic meal available in the world, and it's the first thing I tell anyone making the trip to Hawaii to eat. I feel like it might only be available on the island of Kauai now, but I couldn't write this monologue without mentioning it because they are delicious. It could have something to do with eating one of these hot dogs while in paradise that makes them so good, but I don't care. I'd pay at least $350 for one right now.
Hey everybody, thanks. That will be $350.
I'll use that to segue back into high strangeness with a different type of dog. I've noticed that I've started to get real good with segues on this show.
Damn, you are good.
So, have you ever heard of Inugami? It's a Japanese dog demon said to be the malevolent spirit of a dog that is used to do its master's bidding for all time, including possessing the feeble-minded. There are numerous legends of Inugami possession and sightings that have been reported in Hawaii for near 1,000 years, including what was considered an outbreak of Inugami possession on the island of Kauai. They probably all wanted puka dogs. These demon dogs might just be mad about the quarantine time that the state requires for a dog to become an official dog citizen of Hawaii. But I don't want to get into politics, so let's just let sleeping demon dogs lie. There is one last bit of Hawaiian high strangeness that I'd like to share before I get to today's interview. Many say that Hawaii is full of ghosts and otherworldly beings, not just from one culture, but all of the cultures that live together on the island. The Filipinos brought with them the tale of the Aswang, a vampire-like monster that's been spotted in the Iwa Plain and known to terrorize pregnant women. This creature, a shapeshifter, often appears in human form by day and a monster at night. Some say the Aswang likes to suck the amniotic fluid from pregnant women through their belly buttons using their long serpent-like tongues and feast on the fetus.
More sucking. Are you for real?
Yeah, I guess sucking turned out to be the theme of this episode. I have my own theory as to what or who this supposed vampire is, though, and you might be surprised to hear it. I think it's none other than the head vampire in charge of this realm that sucks more than anyone, Robert Smith from The Cure.
I think that is very, very bad for that man to make an accusation like that. That is terrible.
He's been doomed to write the worst songs for sad goth teens for eternity to make up for all the people he's been tormenting and haunting in the great state of Hawaii. A Faustian bargain of sorts that has him hell-bent on killing everyone's island vibes. I know this is a harsh opinion, and as a musician, I hate to tell you it's actually more fact than my opinion. I felt the same way the first time I saw the Friday I'm in Love video when I was 8 years old. I was just as confused as to why someone would enjoy that song as I am now at 70 years old. He isn't a fly tire, so I'm not really worried about him hearing me say that. Don't tell him, okay? Let's just keep it between us. The last thing I need is for an old crying vampire to show up at my house and suck out all of my amniotic fluid.
Please, leave me alone. I just want to be left alone.
And don't even try to correct me because I know I don't have any of that fluid, but I still don't want Robert Aswang Smith coming around my house looking for any of my many priceless fluids. I sell those for top dollar to various local fluid banks and don't want to get sent to collections again for not being able to pay my Zoom bills. Okay, that's enough nonsense. I'll get to the interview now. I want to hang with Makani. I want him to teach me his Hawaiian waterman ways. I want to catch a bonefish in paradise and then cap off my day with a tropical beverage and a puka dog. Here's our chat. Makani, thank you for joining me on the show, man. I was just telling you that I owe us connecting to a mutual friend on Instagram, Pelagos Fly Rod. So thanks to him for making this happen.
McLean.
I've been waiting and wanting to do an episode about Hawaii from the beginning of the show and haven't been able to put it together until he helped me out. And, you know, I didn't realize how many things outside of fly fishing Hawaii that you're into until I started preparing for this interview. And, you know, ever since he introduced me to you, I've been reading up and, you know, getting ready for our chat. And you know, first thing I learned besides your guide service, fly fishing Hawaii, is that you're a combat vet. And so, you know, first I want to say thanks and, you know, thank you for that. But, you know, I'm excited to learn more about you and fly fishing in one of my favorite places in our realm, the Hawaiian Islands.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, tell me a little bit about you, man. Were you born and raised in Hawaii?
So I was born in Maui, Okay. Raised in the Hawaiian Islands. And obviously, well, not obviously. I would say I was raised in Hilo. Okay. And Hilo is like a mecca of GT fishing for like shore casters with the rods, the dunkers, right?
Sure.
And, you know, so that's what I did. And whipping, that was like a couple of different methods that we did. Fishing since I was 2 years old. And really, you know, went through high school and college on the East Coast at the Naval Academy, graduated there, joined the Marine Corps, and I graduated in 2003. Little did I know that the war would last a very long time. I only laugh about that because I was like, I don't know if this war would last a long time, right? And then I was like, well, we're in it now. Let's go. And honestly, when I was that age, I knew everything.
Sure.
And now I know nothing. That's the progression of life.
Yeah, right. True.
And when I was in war, it was kind of like it was a surreal experience, like you're in a video game, but it wasn't a video game.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense to anybody.
And there was no second chance.
And my daughter just said, and there's no second
That's
chance.
True. You don't get to start over.
Oh, yeah. How is this? How is my 10-year-old?
It's okay. We got a special guest. It's okay.
No, but it was surreal. And I do have combat experience. I got into a few firefights here and there. You know, called in some A-10s. Wow. Got blown up a couple times. Got shot at in a helicopter. Just normal stuff. Because what I did was way less than other people. Like, there's other guys that got blown up like 5-6 times in one day. But obviously, they were route clearance. But still, 5 or 6 times in one day getting blown up, that's a lot.
Yeah. Sounds like a nightmare.
When you're that age, it's like, oh, let's go. And you're alive, right? But when you see people get hurt, that's a different story altogether. And there's a lot of us that fly fish now that are combat veterans that still fly fish. So I don't know if you've watched the Corrupt Hawaiian on Instagram, Elias or Hallelujah Ho Fishing. He was a Vietnam vet. And then you got Josiah. So those guys are on Molokai.
Okay.
And we're all combat vets. And we all have the same stories. We talk about it. You know, what's life after the military? What's life? And we all come together with fishing. Fishing is like one of those things that just brings us all together. And it's super, super, super awesome.
That's right. Well, I'm not familiar with them yet, but I'm going to dive in right after I'm done talking with you. Check them out.
Yeah. And so what fishing does for us more than anything is it just brings us together and we can talk because we can relate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk to vets like nobody can. You wouldn't be, are you a vet?
No.
So you wouldn't be comfortable telling your friend that is a vet, hey, where's your leg?
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Right?
A little different. Yeah.
Way different. Yeah. And his response is, right, somewhere in Afghanistan, I don't know.
Yeah,
you know, but it's one of those things where when you're going through traumatic situations or post-traumatic stress or whatever, the people you relate to the most are the people that were in it with you.
Yeah,
and you know that's just like so, you know, I own Fly Fishing Hawaii. I own Keawe Adventures, and you know I've set up my company where I fish for three days a week. I used to anyway until the fires in Maui, and you know, pretty comfortable. Honestly, pretty comfortable. to the point where I spend most of my time with my kids. And like the days I have off from the kids, not Ilya, we're good. Okay. Not off from the kids.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, I won't take more than 3 bookings a week.
Yeah. That's cool. Yeah.
Because sometimes, you know, I like fishing by myself. Actually, a lot of times, you know, like you have that day when you're fly fishing and you're targeting bones, and bone fishing in Hawaii is like one of the hardest things to do. Sure. Like when I say hard, I mean difficult, like extremely difficult.
Your YouTube you make it look easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only times I caught fish. You see all the other videos I have, hours and hours of video of nothing. Oh man. Anyway, you know, Matt, what kind of questions you got?
Well,
what
you know, I was just going to say, I mean, I love that you have basically every type of fishing in your background, you know, from what I've read, like shore casting, deep sea fishing, bottom fishing, cast netting, spear fishing, and fly fishing. It can only lead to a solid understanding of fish in general. And I was just curious, like when fly fishing came into the picture, and then like when did fly tying, when did that parlay into tying flies and doing all that kind of stuff?
So when I was a commercial fisherman, we used to surround fish, throw net. Honestly, I threw net on bonefish.
Oh, yeah?
I had no idea that people fly fish. I'm Hawaiian, right? I had no idea people fly fish for bonefish, and it was a sport.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, what? Wait. And then it was Keone Downing, George Downing's son, and he's a big wave surfer, the whole nine yards. And he tells me like this, hey, McCrunny, people are really interested in fly fishing. They pay money for this. I was like, really? I know where all the bones are. I know how to get close to them. I know where they are. I got this. So what? And the story is pretty interesting. And I put this in my book that I wrote. I was casting net for these bonefish. Didn't catch anything, but I was walking by the Kahala Hotel, which is right on the beach at the flats between Diamond Head and Hawaii Kai area. It's 9 miles of flats. Some places deeper, you got to really know the tides to catch fish there. And this guy named Ken Steers, never forget him. He stops me. I have my net on my back. He goes like this, hey, and this is like, Keone was already telling me this. Keone Downey was already telling me that fly fishing was a thing and you could make money from it. I already started my company, Keone Adventures. And I was like, oh, cool. And we started talking. And he was like, hey, are those bonefish out there? I looked to the left and I was like, yep, those are bonefish. He goes, can you fly fish for them? And I just heard this like maybe a couple weeks ago from Keone Downey. And this is like 2009, right? And we start a conversation, and Nervous Waters, Sean, never forgets this. This is like the beginning of my fly fishing endeavors. I go, I have no idea how to fly fish at the end of the whole conversation, but I can guide you and lead you to the bonefish.
If you know how, I can show you where they're at. Yeah, yeah.
I can show you where they're at. If you teach me how to fly fish, I will lead you to the bonefish and I'll pay for all the fly fishing gear so I can get involved in this fly fishing scene.
I like that trade. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, this Ken Steers guy, hopefully I meet him one day again. You know, he stated that he owned a house on the 18th hole of Pebble Beach. So there's probably only like 3 or 4 houses.
Yeah.
So one of them is his. And this is in 2009. So we finish up conversation. We link up like maybe an hour after. I just went, walked to my car, brought it back up. He walked up. We went to Nervous Water, the only fly fishing store in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. I go in there. I'm like, all right, Ken, I this is the first time I met Sean. If you ever meet Sean, he's the most... He's not the best salesperson, but He does know how to keep a secret or two.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
he's not going to be like, hey, oh, with this fly, you're guaranteed going to catch bones.
Yeah.
Because he's going to be realistic with you, right? He's going to be like, oh, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, all right.
Maybe you might, because he knows how hard it is to catch these bones.
Well, it sounds so like it sounds like you walked in there as like the perfect customer at that point, though, too. Like you needed everything, right? You know?
Everything, yeah. Right? So I have about $900 cash that I made with tips in my pocket, right? And I'm like this, hey, Ken, what do we need? Just let me know. Mm-hmm. Let's get it. And I'm talking to Sean. I'm like, Sean, hey, Makani, I got this company, Kiawe Ventures. We're down at the Kahala. We're taking people on canoes, whatever. And Ken goes like this. Okay, you need this. You need this. You need this. This, this. He's pointing at reels. He's pointing at poles. I'm like this. Oh, you pointed at four things and it's $900.
Yeah, here's all my money.
Oh, you know what? Let's put that back. Let's get this. Let's get this. And we're good.
Yeah.
And then so he busts out his Black American Express card. He pays for it.
Okay.
And I'm like this. Oh, sick. Right on, bro. I don't even know what that means. Okay.
Yeah.
We go out there. This is my first guy trip ever. We get out to this kind of the same spot that he's seen the bones the day before. And I see the bones. I'm like, right there is the bones, the bonefish, right? And he casts, he hooks a fish. And I'm like, right on. I have no idea what to do after this. Zeros. And he hooks it. It pops off. But that was my first experience with bone fishing.
Hell yeah. It's cool.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, that's a cool story. You know, and I was stalking your YouTube channel and and watched a video from a couple years back where you're basically urging anglers to come back to Hawaii after the pandemic. And
yeah,
I was, you know, after it was winding down, and I'm curious now with the fire situation and stuff, are you kind of doing the same thing? Are people coming back?
So during the pandemic, all the fly fishing guys didn't have business. I my business was thriving before that. And I had like 15 employees, and that's Kiawe Adventures. So we do a litany of tours. We do Pearl Harbor tours, island tours, volcano tours, everything.
It's separate from fly fishing Hawaii now.
I separate it from fly fishing Hawaii. So Kiawe Adventures, I just did something because, you know, advertising and stuff like that.
Sure.
And during the pandemic, I got my PPP loan. The rest of the guys didn't. So what I did is I hired all the fly fishing guys and I said, let's go make videos. All right. And let's advertise the shit out of this. And when the pandemic's over, we're going to have people coming in.
Yeah.
It worked, you know, it 100%, I believe 100% it worked, got people pumped. Now with this last fire that happened here in Maui, you know, Chris, right? Ed's kind of sick right now. Jeremy, McLean, the rest of the guy, Elias, the rest of the guys are out there fly fishing. It was kind of like when it was on Maui, it was zero business. It's still zero business for me because I'm 100% involved in the relief of Maui. But for the rest of the guys, you know, I urge people to come to Hawaii, fly fish, because also we on Maui, we got Johan that is doing fly fishing here. Big Island, we got Dennis, Oahu, we got Jeremy, we got Chris. So, I mean, we have a bunch of fly fishing guys throughout the state.
They're spread out, yeah.
Yeah, they're spread out. And then, you know, so... like, for instance, like Dennis on the Big Island, I was like, Dennis, hey, you should quit your job and be a fly fishing guide. He's like, what? Well, he quit his job. He became a fly fishing guide and is doing pretty good right now.
Hell yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it's been, and then Johan, he branched out from the company he was working for and he started his own business. And obviously the wildfires here in Maui affected him big time, but any requests that come my way, I'll send to Johan, I'll send to Chris, I'll send to Dennis on the Big Island, Chris on Oahu. So that way that they're consistently busy.
Right.
I'm hoping anyway.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, I think my path right now is to really help as much as I can here in Maui, because I think I made a decent impact on food, you know, housing, and you know, obviously it's going to be a long-term thing, but yeah, anyways.
That's awesome, man. I know we're miles and miles away, but we're all, you know, we've all been sending our good vibes over there too. It's tough. I mean, especially those of us that have been lucky enough to visit and stuff and spend time there, you know, it's special for us too. And so I hate to see it happening, and you know, thankful for folks like you putting stuff together, putting stuff together there, man.
You know what's wild is like our fly fishing community is like such a like solid community. Like all my customers from before, they're like this. Ooh, $100. $100.
Yeah.
$100. $100. And I'm like, bruh, you guys are solid.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, it probably cost me, well, it doesn't probably cost me. It cost me $500 a day to operate what I'm doing right now in Maui. I got about $11,000 in IOUs, but I'm good for it. And the fly fishing community honestly has like put that number, like it's getting there, you know? It's like Tahoe fly fishing. Those guys, they came through like a champ.
Very cool.
They're like, Makani, here's $100. Oh, you know, here's $100 more. Hey, here's $1,000.
Oh yeah.
Love you to know hear what I mean?
It. Love to hear it, dude.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That's what it's all about, man. Oh, did I lose you?
Hey, did.
Hey.
Oh my goodness! I got cut off. Is this going to mess up everything?
No, it's all good. I'm still here. I edit these things anyway. It's no problem.
Oh, you do? Oh, yeah. Okay.
I try to make it sound good. You know.
Yeah. Anyways, sorry.
It's totally cool. You know, it's a good time to kind of bridge into some other fishing stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I was curious if you could kind of run through like the type of fishing setup that somebody traveling, you know, to come fish with you from out of state or something should be prepared to have, like, you know, rod, reel, line, that kind of stuff, you know.
Yeah, you know, that's super important. Mm-hmm. So typically an 8 or 9 weight, 7 weight, they all work. You want at least 150 to 200 yards of backing. Maybe 150 yards is plenty. Although I've got all the lines stripped out, had to go find the line, put it back on, and reel the fish in. It happened. Wow. But that's usually plenty. 150 yards is a lot. And with your 8 weight, you have a floating line, whatever color you can see. But don't use yellow or anything like that. You know, white or gray or brownish. Yeah. Those colors are good. They're natural colors, right? And typically I use the same leader size, which is 12 foot. I go 4 foot, 20, 3 foot, 50, no, wait, 4 foot, 30, 3 foot, 20, and then, no, 5'4"3, sorry, 5 foot, 5 foot, 30, 4 foot, 20, and then 3'15". That's when you're fishing where it's all sand and there's no rocks around you. When you're fishing more coral areas, you're going to fish a 40, 30, 20.
Bump same. Yeah.
And it's still going to be 12 foot. And the reason why it's 12 foot is because every time you cast, and we make it 12 foot every single time, because you have to know exactly where that fly is. If you don't know where that fly is, that fish is not going to see the fly. And then all of a sudden, you have no chance of catching the fish.
That's interesting.
Super. It is. Sometimes, depends where we fish, I'll cast 30 yards in front of the fish. Because I can see its trajectory, right? It's coming from left to right.
Yeah,
I see it coming. Going. And what I'll do is I'll cast way beyond it. And I'm trying to intersect that fish. So I have to know, end of my fly line, what is 12 feet. And you have to know that like it's second nature to you. And it could be 9 foot, depends where you're fishing, but you, it's in your mind that you have to know exactly where that fly is. Mm-hmm. So, and if you use the same consistent footage, you'll be more successful every single time. So as that fish comes across, you're going to line that fly up with it. You're going to stop it. Soon as that fish gets close, you start stripping. Mm-hmm. And you see that fish react? Brah. It's all about the strip. It's about how fast you're going, how the fish is reacting. Sometimes you got to slow it down, speed it up.
Okay.
And it's all about the fish. It's so, honestly, I went to Alaska, fished up there. It's boring.
Yeah. Why'd you say that?
Catch fish all the time.
There's too many fish. Yeah.
Right. You're like this. Whoop. Oh, got another one. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In Hawaii, honestly, truly, it is absolutely exciting.
Yes. Yeah. I can hear, I see it. I mean, it's tough, tough situation. Is it windy? You typically really windy on the flats there too, or?
It is always windy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I tend to relate like everything fly tying and fly fishing to steelhead, because that's, I can't help my obsession with those fish and the flies that people tie for them. But the rule of thumb there is always that you have having confidence in the fly that you choose and kind of sticking with that. And bonefish seem like they might break that rule, or they might be just smarter than steelhead overall. Because I mean, I've read you talk about changing flies often when you're targeting them, and then And others talk about the same thing. Is that important? You know, is that a really important aspect? Or
it, you know what? So over the years, so that was early on when I wrote that blog. Mm-hmm. What I've noticed, though, there are some areas that they take a certain kind of fly, and there's some areas that they take a certain other kind of fly. And what I develop is the ghetto super fly, and okay. This is a, you know, basic fly with you know, some EP fiber here, EP fiber there, and you make it look like a rectangle. You put some stripes on it, put some dubbing, put a short wing on it, and with some lead eyes, and that's your ghetto superfly. Super easy to make, and it works unbelievably in places that haven't been fished a lot. Actually, it works all over the place, but you just have to know how to work your fly. Everything works. You just have to know how to work your fly. However,
But with those certain places you're talking about, you're fishing different flies work in different spots. Is that just because they're eating different things in those spots, or is there another factor?
They are eating different things, but at the same time, if you were to look under the water, like Kaneohe, for example, you have mantis shrimp all over the place. You see mantis shrimp swimming like it's going out of style. But you go to Triangle, you still see mantis shrimp. And you see crabs that bury themselves a little bit in the water, and you only see the hands or something, like it's just making a little wave. It's not much, but it's enough for the bonefish to just jump on it. Certain areas like Triangle or the Hickam, you have to use small flies. Ghetto superfly works everywhere. Mm-hmm. Smaller flies to catch these fish, and they're more likely to bite the smaller flies that really look like a crazy Charlie with some rubber legs.
More simple shrimp pattern kind of thing.
Super, yeah. Super, super simple, super small, and it works. Yeah, so many times it works, and you're like, interesting. I'll use my ghetto superfly, which is a little bigger, and not get the same reaction at the Triangle as when I use the crazy Charlie pattern with rubber legs. And a rubber front, just to keep it kind of stabilized.
So the ghetto superfly is one that you've created. That's an original pattern of yours.
Yeah.
Is there any other ones that you've created yourself you're proud of? Like any other patterns?
Proud of? No.
Yeah. Well, I heard you. I saw something you were talking about a crab pattern that you tie, and it piqued my interest.
That crab pattern.
Yeah. After watching you fish it on YouTube, I was kind of enamored by it. I did an episode on crabs, like straight up previously with Onion Creek Flies, Wes McNew, and his crabs are kind of geared towards the Yucatan area. It's a little different, but he swears by yellow eyes, and you referred to the eyes on your crab in a blog post as imperfect and on purpose and difficult to make, and mentioned making them in red, blue, green, black, brown, transparent. Yeah. But never yellow. So I just wanted to know a little bit more about that pattern.
So that crab pattern is pretty easy. So basically what I do is first I tie on the eyes, obviously. Could be any color eyes, honestly. And then what I'll do is I'll tie on the rubber legs and go around with like kind of like a tarantula. Depends what color it is, right? You could go tan, you could go brown, you could go green. I've seen green work unbelievably in certain areas, like because you got the moss on the crabs and everything like that. And literally I can see it in my brain. I'm casting a tan, nothing. And all these fish are there. All of a sudden I cast a green and I'm on in 2.7 seconds. I'm like, ah, not bad, but it's different areas, right?
Yeah.
And it's pretty simple. So you tie on rubber legs. So you got one forward, one kind of midsection, one back, and you tie the tarantula around it, and it could be half inch to whatever. You can cut it after, right? Tie it around just to make sure that the legs are kind of going in the right directions. And, I put eyes on it too. Sorry, I forgot about that. I put a couple eyes in the back. So I make the eyes out of 40-pound test. I'll burn it, create a little ball, put epoxy on it, I put a Sharpie when I first burn it, put epoxy over it. I'll put alcohol on it. And then, that's pretty much it for that one.
Cool.
And you can make it any color you want, right? Yellow eyes, red eyes. And what I did is I made it in huge. And I created that huge eyes. I know what you like. Huge eyes.
Yeah.
And those huge eyes, what they do is they just stick straight up, right?
Okay.
And nobody else does that. And I was like, brah.
Please excuse this interruption for a brief word from one of our sponsors.
This episode of the Secret Society of Fly Tires is brought to you by Dinnership, an innovative new way to get delicious, healthy, vegan, paleo meals delivered straight to your door. Each meal is not only healthy and delicious, but it's simple to make and includes all of the ingredients and equipment you'll need to make it for you and your family. That's right, not only does it include every bit of food you'll be preparing, but it also includes any knives, pans, pots, heating sources, and dinnerware needed to prepare and serve these meals. None of our competitors can say that. You don't even need to have access to a kitchen to use Dinnership. Just sign up for an annual subscription and get tasty meals and a ton of utensils and a stove and a sink and pans and stuff delivered to whatever address you want. I'm serious. This food is great. It contains no animal products and it's also somehow paleo, whatever that means.
That's right. I signed up for a free 6-month trial of Dinnership and I've been enjoying every meal. On top of that, all of the kitchen stuff that Dinnership provides is really high quality stuff, and I sold all of it because I'm a grown-up with my own normal kitchen, so I've come out ahead by about $1,500 so far. My wife and kids really don't like the food, but whatever. I've got $1,500. I can buy a new family if I want. I can do anything. I'm the richest man I know. You're all scum compared to me. You're wet scum, and you're covered in slop and goop, and I'm rich and handsome, and you'll never take that away from me. Thanks, Dinnership.
Please note that this is not a real advertisement, and the company, brand, entity, or product mentioned in the preceding ad in no way endorses, agrees with, or knows about this podcast.
And the crab's sitting on the bottom, right?
And it's so sitting on the bottom, and its eyes are just straight up, just straight up, because the eyes are, like, bigger than normal.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, these fish just attack.
They see him.
I mean...
That's right.
I mean, it's rad.
Yeah.
Super rad.
Yeah. So I think everyone who looks into fly fishing in Hawaii is probably interested in bonefish in the flats, but what are some other fly fishing opportunities outside of that? Like I know in Kauai, there's like freshwater streams with trout and bass and stuff. Like what else is going on your island?
So I'm not too familiar with that, but there's peacock bass, there's regular bass, I think there's rainbow trout, to be honest. But I honestly, here in Hawaii, never fish for them.
Oh, really?
And yeah, I personally never fish for them, only because the saltwater thing is just like,
yeah,
it's awesome.
It sounds exciting. And I get you. I've always said too, that like I'd trade fish in saltwater every day if I could trade it for fish in the river. And I live right on a river here and I fish it all the time and I love it, but there's something special, something a little different. And I grew up by the beach. So, you know, it's just kind of in there for me.
Yeah, that's rad, man. So it's awesome. Fly fishing is awesome.
So what five flies would you recommend people bring in to fish saltwater in Hawaii? Like what should they have in their box?
With a guide or not going with a guide?
If they're going on their own.
Oh. That's a secret. No, just kidding.
Well, they're not fishing your flies, right? Because those are your flies. But
yeah.
So yeah.
One kid at a time. So
give me a couple flies that you think people should have, you know, in their box.
So one of the flies, honestly, is the ET mantis. That's after Ed Tamai. Ed Tamai is like a legend in fly fishing here in Hawaii. I think so anyway. I learned a lot from Ed. The ET mantis is his own fly that he created. And I don't know if you can see that online somewhere, but if you can, that'd be awesome.
Oh,
wow. Coach Duff's Spam and Eggs, okay. Especially if you're in Kaneohe. I bought his boat, so that was huge. I would use the Ghetto Superfly, a Crazy Charlie, and also that you can use the small crab pattern, but the Crazy Charlie with rubber legs.
Okay. Right on. So can you talk a little bit about the difference in fly selection when you're fishing like water with current and waves and stuff as opposed to like calmer, you know, water in the flats?
Oh, 100%. So when you're fishing with current or deeper water, you want to use heavier flies that sink fast. Because you want the fly to be in front of fish, right? If the fly doesn't get in front of the fish, he won't see the fly and you don't have a chance. When you're fishing, let's say in shallower water, you can still use a heavy fly, but you have to cast way, way, way in front of fish. 30 yards, 40 yards, and just wait. And that works too. But it's like 50-50. Usually you can get away. The number one thing is you want that hook, regardless of what weight you have, you want that hook to be facing up. Okay. Because when a fish bites, remember its mouth is on the bottom. So you want that fish to come down, eat the hook, and get stuck. Because when a fish eats, it gills open up and it just swallows everything in front of it. And it's a neat thing to see.
Sucks it right up.
Oh man, it's unreal. When you watch it eat, like from here to there, it's like, brah, what just happened?
It sounds so cool. I mean, I don't do a lot of like sight fishing like that. I'm usually swinging flies in a river and I'm not watching a fish chasing my fly most of the time or any of that kind of stuff. So that sounds super exciting. No, yeah.
It would ruin your fishing.
I bet. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd fish down and you'd be like this.
I'd finally move back to the beach, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be like, I don't know about this. Yeah, that's what it does.
Yeah.
So even with the Ghetto Superfly, I have different weights, right? So in Maui, because the depths are a lot deeper, I'll use a heavier fly. Large eyes, depending on how deep it is, how much wave action. There's always wave action in Maui. I mean, there's always wave action. And still yet, you want to get that fly in front of it. And in Maui, honestly, there's giants here in Maui. I mean, there's giants everywhere. But Maui's kind of like, the Ghetto Superfly works like nobody's business in Maui. Caught fish on every side of the island here. And it's proven itself. The other flies don't work as well. You know, the Crazy Charlies and those flies. You need something more substantial. It's kind of like fishing Kaneohe Bay. You need something more substantial that gets down there and like looks like a mantis shrimp in the surf and it's on. When you're fishing triangle, skinny water, you want that Charlie with rubber legs going out the back. Or something a little bit smaller. You can use a Crazy Charlie, like small flies, and you catch big fish. Like the saying goes, elephants eat peanuts. Yeah. So it's just, It's really cool to see.
Elephants eat peanuts. It's true, right?
Yeah, bro. It's like insane. Like even when you're fishing for ahis or whatever, you can use the smallest thing and catch the biggest ahi.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's funny how it goes the other way too. You can toss big, fat, huge two-hook streamers in the river and catch little fish that are just hungry. They're just hungry, man.
They're just hungry. And then the other thing, when you have current, like super strong current, like let's say there's surf. And there's surge coming in. It just comes in on the reef and flows out really quick, right? Mm-hmm. So not only do you want to cast a heavier fly, but you want to be where the current is moving in the direction of your fly. So in other words, you're casting down current and stripping up current.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's super important because when the currents are like super heavy, let's say you have a cross current, you cast in there, it's like, it's a little harder to catch.
Okay, yeah,
you
yeah,
can,
yeah.
But just harder. Yeah. But there's all kinds of little things that make a huge difference.
Yeah. I don't know if you sell your ghetto superfly, but it sounds like something that you could probably, you know, get out there on the internet and people would be buying it, you know?
Yeah, no, I do sell my ghetto superflies.
You do?
And okay. I remember the first time, because people were been asking, hey, can we get this? Can we get this for a long time? And I was like, I don't know. And then one day I was like, all right, I'm going to sell them. And I posted one thing. I sold $1,000 worth of flies in 2 days.
Got yourself into some trouble. You're like, oh, no.
And I was like, oh, bro, I'm over here like,
yeah. You seem like the type who'd rather be on the water, you know?
Yeah, I'll make 3 flies. I'm good.
Yeah. So some kind of like out, you know, off the wall questions, but like, you know, living in paradise there, and running a guide service, not just the fly fishing guide service, but you also have this other kind of tour guide service as well, right? Yep. Like, you got any good celebrity stories or anything like that? Anybody coming through that?
I do, actually. Yeah. So yeah. You remember the lady Heidi Klum?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think we all did.
Yeah. So I have a canoe at one point early on in my career of starting a guide service. And I have her kids all on my canoe and they look half black, half white. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this, oh, that's interesting. Redhead kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, that's mean. And so this guy standing next to me, I go like this, oh, how's it, bro? My name is Makane. I thought he said he's a SEAL.
No, oh, a SEAL. Yeah.
Right. I said, oh, right on. I was in the Marines. I didn't know who SEAL was, right? Yeah, I'm like, oh, right on.
Yeah.
I knew who Heidi Klum was, right? Yeah, because I'm a dude. So I was like, oh, SEAL. Oh, I was in the Marines. I thought he was security.
Oh, yeah. That's too
funny.
Yeah,
the whole time. Yeah. I never realized who he was until like, probably like a couple of days later where they're like, hey, you know that was the kiss, husband, right?
The kiss from a rose Batman song guy.
I was like, oh, so he's famous. And yeah, that was a good one. Oh, Cheech Maravich. So Cheech comes down one day and this might be too much
Cheech from Cheech and Chong?
Yeah, bro. Like the one and only.
Yeah.
So he comes down with this woman that's, you know, not bad looking, and the kid, and his name on the reservation is Dick Inside You, and because you know that's their alias. So
you almost made me spit my water. I was taking a sip.
Yeah, so I go, hey, Mr. Dick Inside You, can I help you today?
Yeah,
bruh, he started rolling.
Yeah, yeah, like, you had a pal now. Yeah, now you guys are tight. Yeah,
we're good now.
Yeah. That's good. Was he a fly fisherman or just going on a tour?
Just going on a tour with us.
Oh, yeah.
And who was the other? Oh, Adam Sandler. He was good. I have his phone number still.
That's cool.
He comes in. You know, I took him to Pearl Harbor one day. I have a Marine. I have an Army guy. And the Army guy is just all jacked up. He was probably doing steroids at the time. Nah, I'm just kidding. but it was like, hey, Adam, how you doing? Oh, Mr. Sandler, that's what I said. He goes, like, oh, don't worry about it. Call me Adam. Oh, you know, the best shape that I was in is when I was on that movie, Zohan. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I watched that one. But that guy was like a down-to-earth individual that had
regular
just a regular dude that got super famous. And I mean, just solid individual.
It's always nice.
Yeah.
So did you do any fishing in foreign countries while you were in the service? You know, I read an article recently about military dudes fishing for what they called Saddam's bass in Iraq.
Oh, dude, I was there. I wanted to fish so bad.
Yeah.
But I do know the guy. He was a captain. I just met him not too long ago. And he was fishing for Saddam's bass. Looking at those things.
Well, they're just huge. They're huge carp, right?
Huge carp.
Yeah.
And I forgot his name, but it was around his palace. He had them all over the place.
Yeah.
And what
it was like his favorite dish or something like that, wasn't he? Like, loved to eat carp.
Bruh, so crazy. And oh man, you should get that guy on. He's a Navy captain.
Yeah.
And he saw me on Instagram. He came down to where I was fishing and he was like, "Hey, Mokani." I was like, "Oh, hey, bro. Yeah. How's it?" I didn't know who he was. I've never met him before. And see what happens when you post on your stories and people come down.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it was on base. So it was all good. Comes down, we start talking stories, start rapping out. And I go like this, "Hey, wait, you're fishing in Iraq? He goes like, "Yeah." And he told me the whole story. I was like, "Bro, I wanted to fish in Iraq too."
Yeah.
Anyway, long story short, it was a thing. It was a legit thing.
You just didn't have gear to do it or something?
I didn't have the gear, and we just went in there for a mission because Marines don't stay at the palace,
Okay.
We stay outside the palace.
Yeah. So,
an
internet rabbit hole that I sometimes find myself in is watching people open up very old MREs and then check out the food provided to the soldiers, and then they usually taste the stuff from like the 60s and shit like that. What was the worst MRE during your time in the service?
It wasn't my time in the service. We had fresh MREs. The time in the service, I mean, when I owned my tour company, I had this trip that came up and they wanted to do uncomfortable camping. So I was like,
"Wait, they requested uncomfortable camping?"
Yeah. They wanted to do something that was outside the box. So what we did is with 12-year-olds to do something that was challenging and still awesome. So my Navy SEAL friend, I was like, "Hey, you want to come with me? Let's do this 7-mile hike in till it starts raining. Let's camp out for the night. And next morning, let's camp out. Let's walk out 7 more miles." And it was like, "All right." So we did that. And he goes like this. His name's Jimmy. He goes like this. "Oh, I have MREs. You don't have to buy any." We start eating it. It is so old.
Yeah.
Like, bruh.
What were they? What's in them?
It was like macaroni or whatever, you know, the standard MRE stuff that you usually get.
Chili Mac.
And chili Mac or whatever it was. And it was so old, it tasted funny.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh, bruh. Was like.
Funny's not good.
The Skittles did not taste like Skittles.
Oh, yeah.
Skittles. Honey, we don't have any Skittles right now. I'm just talking to somebody else on the podcast.
Where's the Skittles, Dad?
I know. Hold on. Let me get this popcorn.
You know, a dad's work isn't ever over, man. I know it. I know.
No,
I know
what you're doing, you know? Wait till I get off this phone. Everybody's getting off the computer.
Oh man.
And off the phones.
So I feel like everybody probably has Hawaii on their bucket list. Or travel destination.
Yeah.
They haven't been there. But for someone who lives in paradise, where do you dream about going and fishing? Like, what, do you have any spots on your bucket list?
I do not. I have no fishing spots on my bucket list.
Yeah.
I've caught my 1,000-pounder. I've caught enough fish to be like, I don't have any like destination. I don't have any like, I want to go here. Unless I was with friends, like, you know, Christmas Island would be cool, but only if I was with friends.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be the same unless you're with friends.
Totally. Christmas Island is sounding cool too. It's definitely up there for me.
Yeah. I mean, if you're with cool dudes, that's one thing. But if you're fishing by yourself, I can fish by myself here, you know?
Yeah.
But fishing with a bunch of like solid individuals, meeting new people, I think that is something that would be cool to me.
Yeah.
It's like,
That's what it's all about, man. Hanging out with your cool dudes, getting into some fish, wherever you're at.
Wherever you're at. Doesn't matter. Alaska, Hawaii, and yeah.
But, you know, I asked that to a guest I had on just a couple episodes ago, Gilligan Coles up in Truckee, California here. And I asked him, he said he kind of said the same thing.
Gilligan Coles, did I meet him before?
I don't know. He's a pretty well-known dude. He's a guide up in Truckee here near Tahoe.
He's a guide up there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe I haven't met him, but I've taken some. I know people from Truckee, and I've taken them fishing here in Hawaii.
Wait,
oh,
cool.
Dude.
Well,
Truckee's awesome.
Other side of the world, he said the same thing. Like, he's like, I'm in the spot that I want to fish every day. You know, he loves the Truckee, and he thinks it has, you know, it has the kind of things that he wants. You know, and it sounds like you're in the same spot, really. You know.
Yeah, dude, it's awesome. But if you're in a spot like that, you do not want to come bone fishing because it will ruin you.
Yeah. I'm okay. I'm up for getting ruined, man.
So, you come over here, you catch fish, you're like, and it's super hard. Or you don't catch fish at all. You're like, I just saw a fish almost eat my flies. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, it sounds right up my alley because I'm not like a numbers guy really either. Like one is okay. If I get a one and it's like, and it comes to me the you know, the way I want it to, like that's perfect for me. It's just fine, you know?
Yeah.
So one more question I ask all my guests is not related to the fishing or anything like that at all. But have you ever had any paranormal or supernatural experiences? And I'm kind of secretly hoping for something about the Night Marchers because that's where you're at.
Oh, I mean, back in the day, I mean, when I was fishing on the Big Island, you hear like children laughing at night. You hear, actually, you want to hear a good story? Yes, paranormal kind of deal?
Yes,
this is not related to fly fishing. So we're in Kau and we're fishing for this fish called the Menpachi or Uu. It's called soldier fish.
Okay. Never heard of it. Yeah.
And what had happened is I was fishing with my mom and my uncle at the time, and we're catching a lot of fish. We're catching like fish after fish. We're filled up a whole 150 quart cooler in no time at all. Mm-hmm. I got tired. I caught enough fish, and I was like maybe 12, 13 years old. And I walked back to camp, and I feel good in this area. Some places you feel like sketchy, whatever, but I felt good in this area. Like, it was the spirits from before that was kind of like there with me. I walked back by myself, probably a quarter mile to the camp, got settled in, just went to bed. 12 years old now. Then I hear a story later on from my mom. She goes like this, McConney, so last night, what had happened is when you left, I started casting my pole, cast it again. I cast it once and it broke. And she retied it. She cast it one more time and it broke behind her. She's like, what the heck is going on? Tied it again. She cast it again. You get three times the charm, right? She looks back and there's this old Hawaiian man holding all the fishing line in his hand.
What?
Yeah, you wanted a nut story. This is it. Holding all the fishing line in his hand. And my mom goes to my uncle and says, we have to go right now. Done fishing. They grab all their stuff, they head up, and it's like a lower rock cliffside and a higher cliffside. So they go up to the higher cliffside, they climb up, immediately a wave comes up and washes the entire cliff away. You know, things like that.
Did your uncle, you said it was your mom and your uncle were fishing?
Yeah.
Did your uncle see this dude too? No?
No. Not in tuned.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was going to say the same thing, right? Sometimes these things show up for one person, right? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Man, that's a wild one.
Yeah, it's one of them. Yeah, I got plenty.
Yeah, dude, I ask that question to everybody. I don't usually get an answer. A lot of the times they're
for real?
They're like, nah. Or they don't know me. They don't feel comfortable sharing with me. So I appreciate you, you know, giving me one.
Yeah, no, I got a few. Yeah, it's pretty wild I think when you're in tune to the ocean and things that are happening, it's pretty wild. Like, I mean, my great-great-grandfather would, as he got older in age, he was a fisherman in Puako, Lalamilo, on the Big Island. And he'd go out with his canoe every day. And this is like Kamehameha days. And he was known for putting two rocks together, and a fish would come in and jump on the rocks. People saw him do this kind of things.
Wow, what the hell?
Yeah. Now, we come from a line of fishermen.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the story isn't told,
yeah,
no, it's going to be lost.
Yeah, I love it, dude. And, you know, I also love that you use that the tune in tune. You know, I read a lot of weird stuff. I read a lot of woo-woo-woo, weird internet, rabbit hole, paranormal, supernatural, UFOs, ghosts, whatever. And, you know, some of my favorite people that are into that kind of stuff talk about being your antenna, your spiritual antenna, being tuned to this, right? And they use the same term creatively too. And I've kind of taken it on, you know, like I'm a musician, been a musician most of my life, and you kind of have to be tuned in to like get that creative inspiration and get the good stuff, you know, that it maybe not, it's maybe not really coming from you, you know, when it comes down to it.
Yeah, most of the times, like, I don't listen, but yeah, when I do, or like during like these kind of things that happen, like yeah, this last wildfire, bro, there's so many things that I can't explain.
Really?
Just, yeah. I mean, doors open like you wouldn't believe. Hmm. Like, and yeah, just like magical things. And you're like, right on.
Yeah, I try to follow those synchronicities, dude. Like they, when they pop up, no matter how minor they are now, like as a 42-year-old, like I didn't listen to them forever, you know, and I'm trying to pay attention to all of it now, you know?
Yeah, man. No, it's super, super magical. And I'll tell you another story just so
yeah, please.
It's on the record, and maybe one day my kids can hear it later on, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
So when I was a kid, I was like 12 years old, and from the same great grandfather that would call in a fish, and I heard these stories. We went down to the same family land, and we're celebrating Thanksgiving with all the kupuna. So when I was like 12, what had happened was all the family got together, and all the kupunas, like there was like 9 kupunas, but I think like 4 or 5 of them were there at the time. And this is like, it's heavy. And I was sitting at the end of the porch, and this is shack. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but you know, if we're camping out around the yard and stuff like that, it's right next to the ocean. And I see this spirit in front of me. I'm like, whoa. But I wasn't scared, wasn't nothing. And I thought and asked, hey, I hope we catch a lot of fish tomorrow. Because I knew for some strange reason that was an entity that probably could bring in the fish.
What did, and it I thought like? It was, what did it look like? What was it?
It was a white suit and white hat.
Okay. Like a human figure.
Human figure. Right. Next morning, every single cast for the whole day, we caught fish.
No way.
Bro, I can't make this stuff up. Unless you got snagged or something like that. I cannot make this stuff up. Hmm. Every single cast, we caught fish.
Just transported you to Alaska. Some sort of alternate dimension.
Way better than Alaska. Like sometimes you don't catch fish in Alaska, but
yeah,
we caught so many fish.
Wild, man. I love this stuff. I like,
yeah, dude.
I joke around that my podcast is going to eventually stop talking about fishing at all. We're just going to talk about this kind of thing, you know. But
yeah, I mean, there's so many, like I got way more too. Anyway,
man, well, thank you for sharing with me today, man. I appreciate it. Thank you for spending an hour with me. I know you're a busy dude. You seem to be doing lots of stuff, and you got a whole gaggle of kids over there. So like,
yeah, man, they're all smiling and they're on their own right now. They're like, yeah, dad's on the phone, taking advantage.
So thank you, man. I appreciate it. You know, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me and doing this podcast. And I'm looking forward to putting it together and letting everyone else check it out and sharing it with everybody.
Yeah, man. And if you want to do more in the future, just let me know. It's just, I mean, basically talking story, right? There's always stories.
I would love to. So, you know, you said it. I'm going to take you up on it, dude.
All right. Deal.
Right on, man. Have a good one. Thank you. Well, there we go. The second episode of season 3 is in the can. I hope you all enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope you hit up Makani to go fish or take a tour next time you travel across the ocean to the island chain of Hawaii. My preferred attire is a Hawaiian shirt, shorts, and flip-flops. I am not exaggerating when I say that I have thought about Hawaii almost every day since the first time I went there. I have never had the chance to go fishing on any of my trips, though, and I swear to God I'm going to change that ASAP. It was a pleasure getting to know Makani, and I hope he doesn't think this show is too dumb to take me out and show me his flats fishing secrets firsthand. I realize that I didn't include any pro bono ads for self-help or charity or conservation orgs after my last episode, which is something I did for every other episode I've released. I couldn't think of any that were specifically related to helping fly anglers quit smoking cigarettes, though. So after every episode of Season 3, I've decided to showcase some other content creators that I've been enjoying. Maybe they'll end up sharing my show with their followers. Probably not, and that's okay. If you end up checking these people out, leave them a comment and let them know I sent you, would you? Thank you for tuning in, for downloading, or streaming, or whatever. I appreciate you entertaining my inane rambling and sticking with me. This season is shaping up to be a fun one. I'll see you next time. Now, here are a couple recommendations for content that I enjoy and I hope you do too. The Monument Mythos. The Monument Mythos is a web series created by Alex Casanas. The series takes the form of mockumentary videos focused around an America where things took a slightly different course. In an alternate universe, bizarre and unexplainable events occur near national landmarks like the Statue of Liberty or Mount Rushmore. As I record this, there are 3 complete seasons available for free viewing on YouTube and a 4th season that was just released. As soon as I hear about a web series, I instantly have low expectations, and this little series kind of blew my mind. I love it, and I hope you enjoy it too. I'll leave a link to it in the show notes, but if you're too lazy to read through my notes, you can just search for Monument Mythos on YouTube. My next recommendation is Grimerica. Grimerica is a podcast that I've listened to for years now, and the rare one that I have actually contributed money to because I enjoy it so much. Their own concise description of their show is a loose canon podcast exploring the mysteries of the universe through conversations on demand with those who we deem interesting and often on the fringe. We engage the listeners through their stories and suggestions and are supported by them solely. If you enjoyed Coast to Coast AM, I bet you'd like Grimerica too. A fun episode to start out with, and they have hundreds, is episode number 248 about an astral battle between a Northern California pastor and the one-time head of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey. They have definitely been an influence and inspiration of sorts for this show, and I hope you give them a listen.
This episode of the Secret Society of Fly Tires is brought to you by toilet paper. I love toilet paper. It's so fun to wipe my sticky little rump with. I wipe up all the poop and slop with toilet paper and then feed it to my toilet. Num, 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 num. I watch my toilet gobble down my diarrhea and then my toilet paper. I bet you can't believe this is an ad, can you? I don't care. It is a real ad. Now go buy toilet paper and touch your juicy poopy butt with it.
Please note that this is not a real advertisement, and the company, brand, entity, or product mentioned in the preceding ad in no way endorses, agrees with, or knows about this podcast.